The Ringer NBA Show is brought to you by Hotel Tonight. Let me tell you about this amazing hotel booking app, Hotel Tonight. Hotel Tonight is an app that helps you find amazing hotel deals at the last minute. It's perfect for a spontaneous getaway or indulging in a little staycation. All it takes is 10 seconds, just three taps and a swipe. So what are you waiting for? Get in on these killer last-minute deals and download the Hotel Tonight app now. Welcome to the Ringer NBA Show. I'm Chris Vernon, and joining me as he does every week from theringer.com is Kevin O'Connor, a.k.a. Kevin O'Bomber, a.k.a. Kevin O'Concert.
Verno!
Kevin!
Verno! NBA week's back, baby. I'm excited.
The NBA season is upon us. We're recording this on a Monday afternoon, so if anything happens by the time you listen to it on Tuesday or whenever, keep that in mind as to why we didn't talk about it. But we are going to give all of our predictions for the upcoming season, including the eight teams we think are going to be in the playoffs from either conference. We'll talk about who we think are going to be the finals participants in both conferences. And then we'll give out our individual awards. And hopefully, by midseason, we both don't request for the audio of this to be deleted. Predictions are a tenuous thing, to say the least. But I am ready for the season to start for sure. I mean, we have finally gotten there. I have gone to some preseason games getting ready for this season. I am so over preseason basketball. So I'm ready. I'm glad that everything is underway. And, you know, it's a little sooner than it has been in the past, right? We're starting 2 weeks earlier.
Yeah, man. I'm loving the early start. More preseason. Let's go. Let's get it going.
So we do have a bunch of stuff to get to. The news as of today was about LaMarcus Aldridge and the engagement between him and the Spurs about a possible extension. And again, you know, who knows if this happens in the next 24 hours. But I will say, just on the surface, when the story came out by Adrian Wojnarowski about them an extension, I was surprised. I am surprised that there would be a long-term commitment to Aldridge. What about you?
You know, I have mixed feelings. I think, for one, Aldridge is still a good player, right? And I don't think that's necessarily something we should forget. I think Aldridge can reach a higher level. He's been shooting more three-pointers in the preseason with the Spurs, something he hasn't done since he was in Portland. I think you could see him take maybe like two a game, which is double what he took last season, and that's going to help him. It's going to help space the floor more for San Antonio as well. So I think, look, Aldridge, the knocks on him are very, very fair, but at the same time, he's a guy who can reach an elite level as a big man scorer. So wanting to extend him, not such a bad idea in my opinion, despite the flaws that he has as a player.
And a little scary with the Kawhi quad thing that keeps coming up. And he is, like, as much as we, you know, worry about Aldridge in the big moments and in the big spot, he is a guy that could carry you for a couple of weeks as your best guy, right? Like, we've seen it. Like, if you told me that LaMarcus Aldridge, that Kawhi's down and over a two-week stretch, LaMarcus Aldridge averages, you know, 26 points a night, that would not be shocking to me. Right? Like, he can do that if he has to. It's, you know, when you get to when it matters most that I think is the concern.
For sure. So with Aldridge, you look at this preseason without Kawhi Leonard, projecting numbers ahead, like per 36 minutes, can be kind of wishy-washy, a little bit iffy with its accuracy. However, I mean, with Aldridge shooting more threes, he performed like exceptionally well this preseason. He averaged 24.2 points per 36 minutes while shooting three threes a game. I mean, look, he's somebody that he can do it if they need him to. And if they feel like, look, if Kawhi misses any amount of time, whether it's five games or whether it's two games or whether it's 25 games, which would be horrible, Aldridge is a guy who can kind of keep you afloat. And if you don't want to fall down those Western Conference standings if you're San Antonio, which obviously we're going to talk about later. But with Aldridge, long term, he's somebody who I think his game could age quite gracefully, and he's a good complement next to Kawhi Leonard because he can elevate when he needs to, but he's also somebody that he can fill that role, and hopefully entering another season with San Antonio, he's able to make a better adjustment, especially shooting more three-pointers. That's important.
One of the interesting things about him and a possible extension to me is, you know, if you don't, if you're not going to be with him long term, then you start looking to move him, right? Trades. And they are the odd franchise where there's a very famous trade where they moved off of George Hill and they were able to attain the pick that netted them Kawhi Leonard. But it's not a team that you, like, when you think back and you go, you think about the trades that they have made over the years, it's almost impossible to think of them, right? Like, this is not, that's not what they've done. That's not what they do generally. Like, their guys are there and their guys have been there long term. And then the stuff around the fringes takes place. But, you know, if they did make a big deal that included Aldridge and they moved off of him to try to get assets for him, if they decided he's not for us long term, that would be obviously out of character regarding one of their best players, because they just, that's not what they've done. That's not been their mode of operation forever.
Times are changing in San Antonio.
Yeah, I guess so. Or maybe they're not, because again, yeah, they're just committing to a guy again. But that's kind of their deal. They just commit to their guys long term. They don't trade guys. So I guess we'll see. The other story that came out over the weekend since we last spoke was a big name player who is going to miss the first game of the season, and that is CJ McCollum, for coming off the bench in a scrum that was going on in one of their preseason games. And I mean, everybody probably, I mean, if you went, you didn't have to go far to seek out the video. And it is one of those where you watch it and you go, I know there has to be a hard line on this stuff in the view of some, right? Because otherwise it is hard to make determination. But like, missing a game for, I don't know. I mean, yeah, maybe there doesn't have to be a hard line. I know that they would say, and that's what they do say, that there needs to be a hard line on this, and everybody is well aware. And so don't be crying because a guy's got to sit out, because we got a rule, man, and you've got to be aware of that. You can't leave the bench. On the other hand, you watch the video, it's like, oh, come on. You know? You like, know, what?
It's like the right decision the league made to you know, suspend him for it, right? It's like the rule, right? However, I mean, he took three steps, and it's pretty obvious his intent was just to pull his teammate Caleb Swanigan, like, away from the scuffle. And I think if you use logic, like any human would watching that, you would think that. The funny thing to me, and this is kind of the part that I think this was my first thought. The NBA installed all these anti-rest rules. They changed the schedule to assure that star players play on national TV games on big nights, you know, big opponents. You know, the teams aren't going to rest their players on those nights. And then they ban a guy. I mean, they suspend a guy for one game on the opening night of the season for taking three steps onto the court, tiptoeing onto the court. I mean, I just find irony in their decision to do that. Grant, even though it was the right decision, when they're taking all these preventative measures to assure that star players are playing in these high-profile games, it's just funny to me.
So the season is upon us, and we need to go through our teams that are going to make the playoffs in their respective conferences, and then we will go through all of our awards. All right, let me start with the Western Conference. I think you and I are both on the same page that there is, at least in my mind, and actually, you know what? We haven't talked about this, so let's talk it through. To me, there's four teams, and then you can start making decisions after that, right? There's four that are absolutely not a question mark in my mind, and those are Golden State, Oklahoma City, Houston, and San Antonio. Anything other than those being, you know, top four seeds in the Western Conference, or, you know, not, God forbid, not making the playoffs, would be shocking to me. Maybe not top four seeds, because somebody could take on an injury, but I'm just saying, if I'm betting sure things, to be really good teams and uninjured the top four seeds, that's who I'd bank on. Golden State, Houston, San Antonio, Oklahoma City.
And in that order, too, for me. That's my top four, Golden State, Houston, San Antonio, Oklahoma City. I think they're all locks unless they have major injuries. I mean, you could take two guys away from Golden State and they would still make the playoffs, probably.
All right, well, here's
they're loaded.
Here's what I'm a little scared about, okay? All right, so let's put Golden State aside.
Yeah.
They're the thing that you can be most confident in. Even if they were clearly able to withstand injury to possibly their best player last year, and they were still fine. Okay, so we know on them. I am a little worried that I have been, what's the word I want to use here? I have been persuaded to think things that I shouldn't because of preseason basketball. That's what I'm a little worried about. But I'm going to be honest. I have seen I saw Houston in person. I watched them last week. And seeing them and then seeing what they bring off their bench and seeing Harden and Paul together, my thought, and I tweeted this out as I was watching them, was I'm not sure that this – I think it was a foregone conclusion by most that they got better because of the Chris Paul trade. And when I watched them, I thought to myself, I'm not sure about that at all. I'm not sure that they're better than they were last year, Kevin. And I think most people would be surprised if they weren't. But I really, and maybe I'm being poisoned by preseason. But, you know, you've got this, well, okay, how much percentage better are you? Like, what percentage do you get of Chris Paul with somebody else, right? And clearly you don't get what you get with Chris Paul, okay? But, I watch them and I think to myself, I think they're really going to miss Pat Beverly. I think they could miss Lou Williams. Like those guys really, I feared them. Well, as an opponent, Beverly gave them an edge and a heart, and Lou Williams was just like he could just bomb you out one night, even if their other guys didn't really have it going. He could come off the bench.
Hart gets you 50 wins. Hart gets you like to the second round of the playoffs, and that's it. Like you need great players.
I don't think
that's what Chris Paul is.
I don't think it's a problem taking a swing at it. I don't. But I also think their depth was hurt. I do. I think their depth was hurt. Yes,
but they added so many guys. PJ Tucker.
PJ Tucker. Hey, have you seen him?
Yeah, I've seen PJ Tucker.
You have?
Yeah. Why?
Okay, because he's 280 pounds.
Yeah, but he can move. He's versatile. They have Eric Gordon.
No, I'm saying you got to see this guy in person, Kevin. I'm telling you.
Yeah, but he can defend.
No, you have no idea how much weight this guy has gained. I'm telling you, it is bizarre.
I don't know.
Yes. And Mbamute, come on, that's a replacement level player.
Come on. Yeah, baby, he can defend. He can defend though. And he can hit spot up threes. And guess what? That's all you need from him. That's literally it. Versatile defense, spot up threes.
All right, good.
We're talking about the other guys, but Harden and Paul are gonna be the guys who drive this team. Like you're gonna have 48 minutes of Hall of Fame level point guard play. And those guys can coexist when they're on the floor together as well, because Harden is an excellent spot-up three-point shooter, and so is Paul. Harden has proven that he can slash and he can cut, and I don't think you're going to have any issues having Paul adjust to that. The question really is like, what level do they reach by playoff time? But since we're focusing on the regular season, I think they're going to be terrific. I mean, they have the pieces to battle any type of team, Chris.
I'm glad we disagree on this. I really am. Because, like, all right, so once we get past, I get it. Paul and Harden, two of the best guys, all right? For sure. Who do you love after that?
On their roster? Eric Gordon, within his role. I think Eric Gordon, one of the best shooters in basketball, can just fire it off tough angles, off screens. Clint Capella, I love him as well. Improving defensively, still learning the game and getting better, but he's already very, very good. You know, he's going to get more easy lobs than ever before. And he got a ton last year. Like his rate of like lob dunks was fairly similar to DeAndre Jordan. So you're going to see now him with Chris Paul and James Harden getting easier baskets than he ever has. I love those guys. And but beyond that, there's not a lot of guys that I love, but there's guys that I like. I like PJ Tucker, no matter how much weight you say he's gained. I like Trevor Ariza within his role as well. I think they have good players, man. They have the ability to play different styles, and I think they're going to win 60-plus games.
Oh, God.
Yeah, 60-plus.
All right, you and me are way off on this. How,
are you like low 50s or not even 50?
No, I just think that there's a possibility. What did they win last year? 50?
55.
55?
Yep, 55.
Yeah, I mean, if
they added Chris Paul.
They also.
And PJ Tucker.
Hold on now. They also lost guys. You are acting like they got Chris Paul and they didn't lose anything.
They lost Sam Decker, Montrezl Harrell. Yes, I know they lost Patrick Beverley, but that's like pretty much about it.
They lost their third leading scorer, okay? Lou Williams was the third leading scorer on that team.
But he played only half the season after they got him from the Lakers. I mean,
Taking into consideration what they were last year.
I mean, Lou Williams, again, like you have Chris Paul and James Harden. You don't even need a Lou Williams because Paul and Harden are going to be playing. And not only that, like
you think he's going to have a better season than he had last year?
I mean, I'm not saying he'll have a better season, but I think you're going to see a more diverse season from him. Like you're going to see more spot up shooting. You're going to see more cutting, more easy baskets.
Okay, don't you agree that it is a possibility that Harden not being the guy that averages 29, 11, and 8, and the ball in his hands all of the time could actually be better for that team?
Wait, yeah, I think...
The way they played last year, it's feasible that that's better for that team to function completely than putting it all into... Or splitting it up between him and Chris Paul.
I don't think there's like really any chance that they're going to be worse than last year. Maybe their win total is similar, but I just think they're so much more dynamic. They can beat you so many more different ways. I mean, I'm so excited to see what D'Antoni really like figures out over the course of the season to best maximize Harden and Paul and to put them into easy positions. I mean, we saw from James Harden when he was in Oklahoma City how great he can be playing a little bit more complimentary. And now he's playing against Chris Paul, the best distributor really in the game, and really in recent years that we've had. And I'm just excited just to see what Paul does for Harden. But not only that, what Harden does for Chris Paul as well, because he's never played with a guy who can play make like James Harden either.
All right. Wow, this is perfect. All right, so we have a big disagreement on the Houston Rockets and what we think what their possible outcomes are. You are rather confident that they are going to be great. I am not. And especially given the personalities of those two guys, they're all buddy-buddy and they're sitting at the Astros game now. But let that thing go the wrong way and let them go through a losing streak. And I think then we'll see, right? Then we'll see what kind of if they're best friends anymore or if they're great playing together. I just look at it and I say, you know, having a guy that averaged 29, 11, and 8 in their team and you know, is Harden and all these shooters all around them, I'm not sure it is as great a fit as everybody thinks it is. And I don't know. I think I've got a higher opinion of Pat Beverley and what he brought to that team than other people do. And clearly I have a higher opinion of Lou Williams and what he brought to the table.
I just think all that heart, you know, and hustle, that gets you to the second round of the playoffs, and Houston's trying to win a title. And I just think they have many, many more weapons. And not only that, just...
The second round of the playoffs, that would be perfect for Chris Paul, the guy that you're talking about. All that heart. Hey, listen, if there's anybody that could get to the second round of the playoffs, maybe it should be... Yeah, that'd be perfect. I mean, when is he not underwhelmed? And you've got two guys who underwhelm when the stakes are the highest. Hey. Chris Paul's team and James Harden's teams have both underwhelmed, and that's your count.
You know, it's funny you bring this up. There's some guy, after I wrote an article on the Rockets last week, there's some dude who DM'd me on Reddit, and he emailed me from like 7 different accounts with the same email titled, James Harden and Chris Paul are frauds.
I'm sorry I did that.
And the email starts out almost like verbatim, like what you just said. James Harden and Chris Paul are frauds. Chris Paul has never gotten to the conference finals in his 12-year career, and he chokes in the playoffs every year just like Harden. James Harden and Chris Paul are floppers, and they both get exposed in the playoffs when refs stop calling their BS. And then he lists a whole bunch of stats, all the times Harden choked, all the times Chris Paul choked. I think that was you, Chris, from 7 different emails.
It was actually Kevin Durant.
What up, KD? Thank you for listening to the Ringer NBA show. We really, really appreciate it. Please tweet out the link next time you hear us.
All right, so while we agree on the four teams that are going to be playoff teams for absolute certain, we do break ways on Houston. We both agree on Golden State, San Antonio. Again, you just until they're not, I think it is unfair to think anything other than them being really good. And how about this one? I am more in on Oklahoma City than I am Houston. That should be a good one for us. All right. How about that? You want to make a bet on that?
I mean, let's talk about it. Let's talk about it. What do you think, Chris? Tell me about OKC.
Well, because I like OKC in the spot because I think Russell Westbrook can adjust his game when he has got Paul George and he has got Carmelo Anthony. Again, I have a higher opinion of Carmelo Anthony than other people do. But I think when they figure it out, that they're going to be devastating because I like the other pieces around them. And the reason I say I like the other pieces around them is because the guys that you are bringing in to play with them, right? An NBA team is like a puzzle, right? You got to put it together the right way. And so if you've got Kobe and Shaq, it behooves you to have the Derek Fishers and the Robert Ories and the Rick Foxes and these kind of guys that are just, they're not going to take a ton of shots. They're going to play their role. And I think the guys that they found, while everybody can besmirch somebody like an Anthony Roberson, but you got like the Robersons and the Steven Adams and the Patrick Pattersons. And I mean, these guys are willing and able role players. They're not guys that are going to do too much or that you're going to be able to blame. And so they got enough offense and they'll always defend their position and they'll keep the ball moving on offense when they touch it. And so
I hope so.
I really like their roster construction. I do. I like their roster construction.
I like your puzzle analogy. Bob Myers, Warriors general manager and probably one of the smartest GMs I've heard just the way he talks about basketball. He mentioned like when you're building that puzzle, you find a corner piece first. And the Thunder have three corner pieces and Westbrook, Paul George, and Carmelo Anthony. And the way they've filled the blanks there is, as you said, Chris, I'm with you that they could be terrific this year once they figure it out. They have the ability, kind of like with Houston, to play different styles. Patrick Patterson, one of those puzzle pieces. You throw him in there, put him at the five, and you can have a lineup with spacing. You could have Patterson at the five, Anthony at the four, George at the three, Westbrook at the one. And maybe you have Roberson at the two, and he's kind of like your five on offense. Like he's the guy you have kind of like in the center spot. Or you have a shooter in place of him, whether that's Abrines or Terrence Ferguson or Kyle Singler, someone like that, or even Josh Huestis, who has looked pretty good in preseason. They have the ability to play different ways, and I'm excited for them towards the end of the season. Really, the question for me and really the hurdle that they're really going to have to figure out is how can Westbrook evolve with Anthony and with George? Will he be willing to take fewer risks on the floor? Will he be willing to take on more of a distributing role? Will he allow those guys to really take hold of the game when they are the guy that's really hot, when they're the guy that's really rolling on the court? Will he kind of allow them and give them space? I don't know. I mean, I hope he does, because if he does, their team could be terrific. One other thought, Chris, and like, this is something that someone brought up to me recently that I hadn't really thought about. But with OKC, how willing are Carmelo Anthony and Paul George and Russell Westbrook? How willingly are they going to like cut? Are they going to like precisely run through screens and set off ball screens? Like those little things all add up for them over the course of the season. I think in the playoffs they're going to be fine because those guys can all score in isolation. But during the regular season, I wonder how much those guys are going to take on doing those little things, because that's what separates Golden State. Not just their talent, but all their stars do the little things. And I wonder how much Oklahoma City will have that happen or won't have that happen.
Okay. Was one of my arguments. And this is kind of maybe, hey, it's kind of where we break ways again. And maybe it's why my opinion of Oklahoma City is different than Houston, and yours is different of Houston than it is Oklahoma City, and more confidence. It's because, I, you know, listen, I was a Westbrook guy. You were a Harden guy last year. I am one that thinks that Westbrook, I mean, listen, Kevin Durant won an MVP playing alongside Russell Westbrook. So I don't deny his ability to play with another great player. I think he has proven he can play with another great player. Plus, he's an MF every night, this guy. And I thought he had a rat team last year, which, by the way, Kevin Durant agreed with me. I thought he had a rat team, and he drugged them to the wins that he had last year. And I thought that was a great case for his particular his MVP candidacy, because
Katie also doesn't think Billy Donovan is anything special either.
I understand.
Vegeta.
I get it. But I mean, my opinion was so low, and that's why I thought so highly of Westbrook and what he did last year, that if you tell me, all right, so now I saw this guy just drag a load of crap to what he did last year, and now you're going to throw Paul George and Carmelo Anthony with him? Like, I don't know, man. I think that thing could be devastating. I really do. I think it could be big time. Once they might take a little while to get the kinks out and figure it out, but when they do, whew, oh boy.
I don't disagree with you at all, Chris. I'm 100% with you that by the end of the season, they could be a real, real threat. I think they could be a team that the Warriors might look at and think, we need to be on against this team. I think Melo, George, and Westbrook could be pretty, pretty spectacular. It's going to take time, though. Them more than any other team that really added star talent, they're the team that's going to really need to figure things out over the course of the year. So don't overreact if they get off to a slow start. All that matters is that team is ready to go by April and kind of February, March, April. They better be looking good by then.
All right. So as we're talking through this, we got those as the top four teams in the West. Then we've got let's just make sure we agree on this, and this will make it faster. The Mavs, the Lakers, the Suns, the Kings. None of those are making the playoffs. Is that fair?
Mavs, Lakers, Suns. Yes. Good. Yeah.
Okay. So we'll throw those four out. So now we have four spots remaining for Minnesota, Utah, the Clippers, the Nuggets, Portland, the Pelicans, the Grizzlies.
Okay.
Is that fair?
It's fair. Right? Very fair. I'm
There's
with
seven.
You.
Again, regarding the overreaction, I saw the Pelicans the other night in person. I was sitting by an out-of-town NBA executive, and I said one of the things that I said to him was, I think this is like a basketball crime, what has happened with Anthony Davis. I really do. I'm telling you, and again, maybe I'm overreacting, but I watched that team, and now, in fairness, I walked out of the arena when the Grizzlies were up 117-74, okay? But I watched them, and I go, you know, if there's anything, you got possibly like the next, like, Tim Duncan-type level talent, right? Anthony Davis could be one of the best 3 to 5 players in the league, and if you're running that team, all you would think about is, what's the best way for me to build around this guy? And it's just damn malpractice. It really is. Obviously, the Boogie thing is not a great fit with him if you're trying to figure out what's the best fit. But then the rest of it, it's just a...
Tony Allen.
I'm just saying, it's
Rajon
just
Rajon Rondo.
It's just a mess.
Etuan
it really
Moore.
Is. It is just the... It's like if you said, like, hey, what is the best way for us to build around Anthony Davis?
Yeah.
And then that's the roster you walk into arenas with. I'm just like, this is downright malpractice. So I'm out on them. And maybe I'm reacting because of what I just saw. But, like, I don't get it, man. Like I said, with the puzzle analogy, like, the pieces are just all over the table. And they're not even to the same – well, they're not even to the same puzzle.
That's very true. They're trying to put together two puzzles that don't fit, and that's the issue right here. That look, I mean, you mentioned Boogie and Cousins. Boogie and Brow. Those guys could work. I mean, it could work. I mean, where you have two big men kind of running the offense more through them, a little bit of inverted style. The problem is everything else on the roster. There's no spacing, especially when Rondo comes back and he's playing more point guard. I mean, just kind of, you know, aside, Rondo has shot the ball well the past 2 or 3 years. Statistically, he has. But the problem is his defenses still don't respect his shot, and he's still not good enough of a shooter to really warrant being that threat. And not to mention that could be a small sample size and he'll fall off a cliff shooting this year. There's just no spacing. That's what you need, is to put a lineup around Boogie and Davis that gives them space to dominate on the interior, but also complement each other on the perimeter as well. And that's their roster is the opposite of what you would want. And that's just frustrating for me, because I want it to work for AD. I would love to see this lineup with Boogie and Davis just dominate. I think that would be cool. When we have so much spacing in today's league, so much three-point shooting, and you just throw out these two big guys that dominate, who are the best big men in basketball, that would be amazing. I just don't see it with the rest of their roster, and that's
all right,
sad.
So I think we're both kind of on the same page regarding the Pelicans.
Yep, we are.
Okay, so now we have the Utah Jazz, who, I'm going to tell you, Kevin, I'm not as high on as everybody else is.
People are high on them?
Yeah, it seems like they're kind of like a loved team. And I see...
Because I like them, too. I mean...
You do?
I don't know if they'll make the playoffs, but I like them. I didn't...
Beyond the whole losing Hayward, okay? Because I get, right? Rodney Hood could step up and whatever,
yeah.
Right? I think the George Hill loss is real. Like, that is not mentioned at all.
You're not a Rubio guy?
What has he won?
I mean, it's like the whole Kevin Love question. Kevin Love never won in Minnesota.
I mean, you hate guys that can't shoot, so you can't like him.
No, I mean, I'm really not the biggest Rubio fan. I'm not.
Yeah, I mean, no, I think George Hill, like, you remember, I remember us talking throughout the year, and people were talking about, like, through the first, I don't know, 30 games, people were talking about maybe George Hill being an all-star, and that their record, look at their numbers and their record with him on the court versus when he can't play. Obviously, he went through, you know, big injuries last year, and they only played 49 games for him. But in those 49, he was really good for them and brought a different element, and obviously not being able to play in the playoffs was a killer for them. But I just I think he's a loss, too. You know, I'm in love with the rookie, Donovan Mitchell. And I don't think they're going to be bad. I just wonder, you know, so many of these games come down to the last 2 minutes. And so who is it now? I guess Joe Johnson still, right?
Yeah,
ISO Joe?
ISO Joe.
But no, if you need a bucket, who are you throwing it to?
I mean, they can't be that type of team because they don't have that type of guy. So you're right. They don't have that. I just think with Utah, the question for me, and you mentioned Rodney Hood, that's who it's going to have to be, who is going to have to really elevate his play. And Rodney Hood can. I mean, you look at his numbers the past season when Hayward was off the floor. The numbers he put up when Hayward's off is pretty comparable to what Gordon Hayward did. The thing is that Rodney Hood has had injuries every year, and he's already been banged up a little bit in the preseason. So is he somebody who can play 70-plus games for you? I mean, if he is, they're going to be damn good, and I think they could be the 7 or the 8 seed. But if he's not, I think they're going to be on the outside looking in. I think the odds are, considering their roster construct, considering the issues that you outlined, they're probably not going to make the playoffs, but I think they're right there on the bubble with those other teams that could really compete for the 7 or the 8 seed.
I would agree with that. There's going to be a dogfight for those two spots.
It's going to be fun.
For sure, right? Because a couple of these teams will distinguish themselves. It's just hard to figure it out, right? You know, the numbers and the projections are really good on Minnesota. But much like we were talking about the puzzle, I have real questions as to how that fits together. You know? Like, and who is the, you know, when you, Wiggins and Towns, right? It feels like this summer, their defense, both of them, have gotten really shredded for the defenders that they are. You bring Jimmy Butler to the table, and so who's the guy there now? It stand to reason it's probably Jimmy Butler. He's clearly the most accomplished of all of those guys. But how does that all fit together with Jimmy Butler and Towns and Wiggins? And I'm not here to tell you that it won't fit together. I just have questions as to how it all fits together with them. And then once you get past those three guys, do you care really about anybody else?
I mean, their roster, I'm definitely like a solid under on them. Their over under was like 48.5, which is just ridiculous.
Oh, I mean, but you would agree then, those three have to be awesome together.
Yes.
Because once you get past those three,
their depth is not that good at all. They have some issues coming off their bench. That's why for me, we're going to talk about surprise disappointments later. They're probably going to be the disappointment for me in the sense that yes, they're going to be better. Yes, they're going to be fun. But if people are expecting them to like come close to 50 wins, it's just not going to happen. I don't think that they're at that stage in terms of the depth. Jeff Teague is an average point guard. They have a lot of average or below average players, and their roster construct is kind of weird where they have kind of all guards and all bigs, but really not many wings or forward types. They have Wiggins, Muhammad, Butler, and that's about it. I mean, I think you're going to need more than that over a 48-minute game to contend against some of the better teams in the league.
Because you know this, right? So what we think to ourselves, I think you and I would agree on this, you're going to be awesome at something if you're going to be good. So Utah, I may say that, hey, these games are going to come down to the wire, and who do they throw the ball to or whatever, right? But there's no doubt in my mind Utah is going to be a really good defensive team. Like, I believe that. They will be, especially, they're going to have Rubio at the top. They're going to have Gobert on the back line. That team, and they were already, good defensively. That's going to be a good defensive team. When I sit there and go, all right, what are you going to be really good at? Is it offense with Minnesota? Is it defense with Minnesota? I mean, the Thibodeau's teams have been known for defense. But, I mean, it feels like with the roster, like you would have to kind of count on them being really good at offense, but I'm not sure they're going to be great at either of them.
So that's where I think they're really going to need to make significant strides, because Karl Towns and Andrew Wiggins, they have shown the ability to be great defenders. I mean, we look back pre-draft. The book on Towns was that he'll come in and be a good defender right away. Versatile defender, can protect the rim, can rebound. Andrew Wiggins, it was lockdown wing defender, super versatile, could really become one of the better defenders in the league. And Wiggins has been really horrendous defensively. Ever since his first season, Towns has been not good at all. And maybe that's where the improvement comes, is having a guy like Jimmy Butler on the court, having someone like Taj Gibson on the court, in the locker room, on the bus, on the plane with those guys, really infusing a defensive mentality. That's where the change could really happen, because these guys are going to score buckets with Towns, Wiggins, and Butler. And Teague. The question is really, how much are they actually going to defend? And I hope Butler really does lead the way with them, because that would change Towns' career, change Wiggins' career, because those guys, in order to reach that super elite level like Towns can, and Wiggins maybe, they're going to have to defend.
Okay. So you and I are both a little bit lower on Minnesota than a lot of people have projected.
I got them in the playoffs, though. I got them in the playoffs for sure. I have them as a 6th seed.
Okay. All right. Clippers next. Just talking through this.
50 over.
Well, I like Beverly. Unfortunately, it's the same story that it's been for many years. And I think I look at them and go, well, geez, you're counting a lot on Gallinari and Blake. And their inability to be healthy throughout seasons is what really scares me off of them. Because once you, if you lose either one of those guys for an extended amount of time, you're going to have Lou Williams coming off the bench and he could get you buckets, right? DeAndre Jordan will do what DeAndre Jordan does. Other than that, you're playing in a West where you're going to have to, if you're not awesome defensively, you're going to have to be scoring over 100 every night. And I have a hard time looking at their roster and figuring out how you're getting over to 100 on a regular basis.
Yeah, their defense is going to be an issue, and they have a lot of injury concerns with Blake. Even Beverly has missed games in the past as well, and Gallinari. They have a high variance of outcomes. Like, they could be really bad. Like, they could miss the playoffs if they have injuries. But I think they could also be pretty terrific in the regular season with their more modernized style of play. They're really moving the ball around. Doc Rivers doesn't seem like he was lying when he said that's the type of offense he wanted to install. They looked really good offensively in preseason. I'm just not sure if they're going to get the stops necessary against those top teams in the playoffs. But regular season, I think they're going to be fun, man. I think they could be the 5 seed if they stay healthy.
What?
Maybe push for the 4 if one of the top 4 teams has injuries.
What in the world?
Well, where do you have them at? Who do you have ahead of them in the West?
Did you just say 4? four seed
no,
with the
five.
Clippers?
No, I said five. I said I have them at the five, and if a top four seed has injuries, then they could be the team that pushes for that four seed.
Wow. I don't know how you square this. You just got done massaging Chris Paul for the first 30 minutes, and now they've lost. They have lost Chris Paul. They have added Patrick Beverley.
And Gallinari. And they're
going to
change style of plays, finally.
And they're going to be as good a seed as they were with Chris Paul?
Yeah, but, I mean, I don't – last year's seeds, whatever.
How about forget last year, all the years.
For what it's worth, they were the four seed last year, tied with Utah with the same record, 51-31. I don't think they're going to win. I probably don't think they'll win 50. But maybe they do. Maybe they come close. Maybe they win 50 right on the button. They just have a lot of talent, man. They didn't just lose Chris Paul. They added a lot of people to their team. They have way better depth this year than they did last year. Don't forget Milos, Lou Williams, your guy Lou Williams. Austin Rivers is a solid role player. DeAndre Jordan is still very, very good as well. I mean, they have some depth on their team, and they have some young guys that could step up, like Montrezl Harrell, Bryce Johnson. I like their squad. I really do. I mean, if they stay healthy, I think they're going to be one of the funnest teams in the league to watch this year.
Wow.
If they're healthy. That's a big if.
Yeah, well, that's not exactly a team that I think that's hard to count on. The Nuggets are the one I am most torn on, because here's the thing. The Millsap addition is good. I think the coach is good. They got some really good young talent. I think they could be severely held back by lack of point guard. That this is a team that I look at and go, God, man, if they had a point guard, I could see them being a big, big problem, and that they could make a big leap. Because, I mean, Jokic's taking another step forward. You're adding Millsap, who I think is an underrated player for sure. He's been a perennial all-star, and has been an outstanding player on a team that won 60-something games. So, like, I have no doubts on Millsap and what he can bring to the table. And then, you know, they got Gary Harris should be happy because he's richer than hell now. And you got, I mean, I like Barton as a six-man. I mean, I like a lot of their stuff. I can't stand the point guard thing. And I think it could really hurt them. And so, I don't know, talk me one way or the other, because I'm really torn on Denver.
I like Denver. I like them quite a bit, Chris. But again, like, they're really still that 7-8 seed, maybe? I mean, that's about where I see them this year. I think point guard could be problematic for them, but at the same time, Jokic and Millsap are going to be terrific. I like their depth. I think they have a lot of good players that are coming off their bench. Juan Hernan Gomez, I'm super high on. Malik Beasley, I like a lot. Will Barton, they're another one of those teams that can adapt and play different types of styles. I think they could be really good this year and really fun to watch.
It's hard to be really good without a good point guard, though. You agree?
Yeah, definitely. I think that could be really
okay. So you either got 35-year-old Jameer Nelson or Emmanuel Mudiay.
Yeah. Yep. Unless Jamal Murray takes on more ball handling responsibilities, but I don't see it.
Boy, I'd take Fareed out there and try to, right? Wouldn't you take Fareed? And especially because you got Millsap, and if he's got any value, just try to find me somebody. It's hard to get a point guard, though. I mean, who's giving up anybody that could really help you, right? Probably nobody. Portland,
so.
Do you buy into the second half once the trade was made? Do you buy into, what they got? And really, actually, you know, because I don't think the playoffs were not a good representative of them and what they were able to bring to the table when they had Nurkic. But how much do you buy into the record with Nurkic, which was admittedly outstanding?
I mean, Nurkic is playing the most inspired basketball I've ever seen him play. I mean, he shred weight this summer. He looks great, man. I think he's somebody who I may have doubted him a little bit too much after the season. I forget. I might have been on Bill Simmons' podcast where I said something like, I don't know if I buy it. I don't know if I buy that Nurkic is going to play with the same effort he did at the end of last year. But you know what, man? He sure as hell seems like a guy who's really going to be doing that. So I have Portland in the playoffs. My bottom four, Chris, really, and this is going to disappoint you, but I have Clippers, Minnesota, Portland, Denver, which means Grizzlies are out.
Oh, my goodness, the team I cover on a daily basis. Well, you and I have talked about this off the air, and I told you I think there is the grandest variance with them of what they could be and what they could be. They could either be a lot better than people expect them to be, or worse than maybe anybody expects them to be. But I have always said that this is going to be the grandest test of my thoughts on that team, which is, I have always said, if they have a healthy Mike Conley and a healthy Marc Gasol, they will always be good. You are not going to be a loser if you've got those two guys and they're healthy. And if they play, 65 to 75 games, most of those lists had those guys both in the top 30 of best players. And they also play very key positions for you, both offensively and defensively. But this is the great test, because everything else around them is a question mark. Literally everything. So we're about to find out, can you just throw anything with them and be good? Because, you're going to see opening night, they're going to have JaMychal Green, James Ennis, and maybe either Andrew Harrison or Wayne Selden. I know.
What happened to Wade Baldwin?
He gone.
Yeah.
You kill him for making the draft pick.
Yeah.
I also give him a little credit, because it does take big balls to cut a first-round pick. He's just not as good, right? Mm-hmm. Usually you try to justify mistake, and you just refuse to admit you were wrong about something, right? But the fact that you're now to the point where you just say, all right, let's just cut it. We'll take the PR hit. We'll take the optics are bad, and just get – we don't think he's going to come back to bite us, or we don't think he's he's clearly not what we thought when we drafted him. And so you move on from him fast. I don't know.
Got to give him credit for that. I agree. And I think I have him outside the playoffs, but I think they're going to be really competitive this year. And if there's any of the teams that I have – actually, I don't know if that's true. I think I'd put Utah ahead of them. But I think Memphis would probably be in the 10th slot for me, where – look, man, they're going to be right on that bubble. The Western Conference is going to be crazy. Like that,
I agree with you.
Until mid-April, it's going to be nuts, right down to the wire, I think, for those last seeds.
Yeah, I was kind of out on the Pelicans, as were you. So then of the six that we decided, I agree with you. I think Minnesota will be a playoff team. In the end, those three guys, while I don't think they're going to be as good as some people think they're going to be, those three guys are still good enough to get you somewhere. Utah, the Clippers, the Nuggets, Portland, and the Grizzlies then are the other three slots, right? You kind of convinced me on the Clippers, but you were way too high on them for me. I'm out on the Utah thing, and maybe I'm just being a homer here. And then I don't know on Portland either, because once you get past McCollum, once you get past those three guys, I don't care about anybody else, honestly.
I mean, you could say that about the top two and the Grizzlies, though, once you get past Gasol and Conley.
That's fair. That's totally fair.
Mario Chalmers.
Chandler Parsons, man. Sixth man of the year.
Low key, you never know. If he stays healthy, you never know.
No, I think it is going to be a dogfight, but I would say, and I don't like the Nuggets point guard situation. So the only one of those that I am clear on, I think, is Minnesota. The other ones, I have no great clarity on, but if I had to pick them, I'm going to put the Grizzlies in there because I'm a homer and put them at the 7 or 8. And then I'll say, I'm down to the Nuggets in Portland. I'll throw the Clippers in there, and we'll assume health, because I think that's what you have to do at the beginning. So I'll throw the Clippers in there. And I met Danilo Gallinari over the summer, and I loved the guy. Awesome guy. So Portland or the Nuggets, which of those is going to be better?
I have Portland as the 7, Denver as the 8.
I think the point guard thing kills you. I do, if you're the Nuggets. I do. I don't think that's good enough. So I'll say Portland too. All right. So we got ours. We don't agree, but whatever. And you're wearing a Rockets jersey. Let's hurry to – all right, let's burn through the East real quick, because who gives a shit? I'm kidding. For all of you East fans, I'm sorry. But let's just agree. Let's see if we can agree on this, because this is going to take literally no time. The Western Conference is way more fun to talk about. I think anybody would admit that. Cleveland, Boston, Washington, Toronto, Miami, Milwaukee, and the Hornets. I think those 7 are for certain. playoff teams. And in fact, what's interesting is I was reading Kevin Pelton's, you know, his odds that he puts together through Real Plus Minus, etc. The lowest on that list was like the Hornets, and their playoff percentage or making the playoffs was like 93%. And then there was like, yeah. And then there's everybody else after that. So do you at least agree with me? I actually agree with those seven that they will be in some order, the playoff teams in the East. And then we just got to figure out the one other team.
Yes.
Okay.
I'm with you. But I would say the only two that could, like, if they have an injury or something like that, Miami or Charlotte, maybe they're the team that falls off. But beyond that, yes, I think those seven teams, they're my top seven.
Okay. So then if we say Orlando, Indiana, Brooklyn, the Knicks, the Bulls, the Hawks, none of those, well, any of those teams making the playoffs would shock me.
Okay.
Is that fair?
I missed all the teams that you listed. I'm just gonna say yes.
Okay. No.
Yes.
Yeah. I'll hurry. Orlando, Indiana, Brooklyn, the Knicks, the Bulls, the Hawks.
All out. All of them out.
Yep. All right. So we're really just deciding between Philly and Detroit.
Yes. I'm with Philly, baby. Philly. Philly. It's going to be Philly. I think Embiid's going to play enough. Hopefully he plays 60-plus games where they're going to be very competitive. I like Brett Brown. I love the offense he's installed for that team. I want to see how it changes with Ben Simmons. But I think Philly's going to be a really competitive team in Detroit. They're going to be right there too, man. I mean, I'm kind of almost picking with my heart here, to be honest. Because Detroit's got probably more playoff-ready talent in some ways. I think Andre Drummond.
All right, I'm Detroit. So okay. This is where we break. That's fine. No, but that's fine. Listen, I don't love
We're talking about the 8 seed.
Yeah, and we're talking about the 8 seed, and I don't love the Reggie Jackson, Andre Drummond thing.
You got Avery Bradley, though, too.
I love Avery Bradley. And the other thing is, if they don't make the playoffs, we can say goodbye to Stan forever. Maybe not forever, but I don't know. It'd be hard for an old school.
You sound happy about that.
No, I love him.
We can say goodbye to Stan forever.
I love him. And I love his press conferences. I don't hate Langston Galloway. I like Tobias Harris. Like, I don't know. I kind of like some other guys on that team.
Yeah, maybe Stanley Johnson gets better. Maybe Luke Kennard has a really strong rookie year. They got talent, man. I mean, if you're picking with your head, that's probably the team you're putting in the playoffs.
I mean, you got Reggie Jackson and Avery Bradley as a backcourt, and you got Drummond, right? So I at least got those three guys. Yeah, and Philly's just too young yet. They're too young.
Yeah, they are.
The young teams don't win.
And that's what I was arguing with Chris Ryan for the NBA Palooza preview video we're doing, and like that was my main point that I used is like Philly's just too young; they're not ready to be great.
Well, you can go back; anybody can do this. Go back and look at rookie point guards. That's it, and team success.
Yeah,
I mean you'll find the Rose team that was around 500, a kid team. You know, I mean, there's just not many throughout. And those guys were both obviously immediately awesome, Rose and Kidd. But, I mean, almost everybody else.
Chris Paul, too. Yeah, there's not many of them.
But everybody else was a loser, you know, at the beginning. And then they weren't. So I just think it's a you thing. All right, Western Conference Finals. I've got Golden State playing OKC. That's what I think.
I got Golden State Houston.
All right, perfect. So this is where you and I break on OKC and Houston.
Yep.
And then in the East, Cleveland and the Celtics. I just don't.
Yep, I'm with you.
All right, if it's not the Celtics, I think it'll be the Wizards. Is that fair?
Yeah. I think I'd go there, but you know, I also wonder how much better Milwaukee will get, or depends on seeding. And I think Washington would probably be my choice. I hate to agree, but I think I'd probably lean towards Washington. Yeah.
All right, so and then I think there's going to be another. I think we get the fourth time, right? Golden State Cavs. I think
I got. I worry about Cleveland and their defense and their personnel. This just feels to me like another one of those years, like LeBron's last year in Cleveland, the last time around, where the roster's just. It could be. Look, let me say this. Their roster could be better this year than it was last year. But there's so many ifs. If Isaiah Thomas is healthy, if Kevin Love stays healthy over the course of the year, if Dwayne Wade experienced some type of renaissance this year playing next to LeBron James, if Jay Crowder shoots the ball as well as he did last year, if Derrick Rose gets better, if Jeff Green plays more consistently, like there's just so many ifs. If J.R. Smith plays as well off the bench as he did as a starter, and I just have concerns about how many of those ifs become real problems by playoff time. And so I think Boston has an ability to play different types of styles. Again, same thing kind of with Houston, Oklahoma City, where they can adapt. And they have enough weapons now with Gordon Hayward and Kyrie Irving.
I think
they could beat Cleveland based on the rosters today, but that could change over the course of the season. Because if Cleveland starts answering some of those ifs, they're going to be terrific, man.
Well, Boston, I read Isaiah Thomas's the article, the Lee Jenkins thing, and he said that Boston is going to regret getting rid of him, so I believe him.
I'm rooting for Isaiah.
I believe Isaiah Thomas. I think Cleveland will win the East like LeBron does every single year. And how about that? And then I think they knotted up at 2. I think they win.
I think they
win the title. By that time, they got a healthy Isaiah Thomas, and they I think they knotted up at 2, and they win the championship this year. And it is a LeBron revenge. And I will tell you why it is LeBron revenge. We got to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to give out our season awards, our predictions for the upcoming season and the awards that are going to be given out after these words. The Ringer NBA Show brought to you by TNT. After a blockbuster season, the NBA is back tonight, Tuesday, October 17th, and Thursday, October 19th, with two nights of electrifying doubleheaders. On October 17th, that's tonight, Kyrie Irving leads the Celtics to Cleveland to battle LeBron James and the Cavs at 7 p.m. Eastern, and at 10:30 p.m. Eastern, James Harden and Chris Paul lead the new-look Houston Rockets to the Bay to take on the defending champion Golden State Warriors. But there's more. On October 19th, on Thursday, the Knicks face Carmelo Anthony and the Big Three Thunder in Oklahoma City at 7 p.m. Eastern. At 10:30 Eastern, you'll get a first look at Lonzo Ball and the Lakers taking on the Clippers. NBA coverage begins at 7 p.m. Eastern on October 17th. That's tonight, and October 19th on Thursday on TNT and the TNT app. We're also brought to you by SeatGeek. Buying tickets to sports and concerts can be complicated and confusing, but there's a better, simpler way to buy with SeatGeek. With their seamless mobile experience, you can buy and sell tickets in just 2 taps. There's nothing quite like seeing your favorite team or musician in person, and SeatGeek will get you closer to the action for a great value. SeatGeek saves you time and money by searching multiple ticket sites to compare prices and find amazing deals. SeatGeek also has plenty of concert, comedy, and theater tickets available too. Best of all, our listeners get a $20 rebate off their first SeatGeek purchase. To get your $20 rebate, download the SeatGeek app, go to the settings tab, and click add a promo code. Enter the promo code RINGERNBA. SeatGeek will send you $20 once you've made your first ticket purchase. Download the SeatGeek app and enter the promo code RINGERNBA today. All right, Kevin. So I said that I think it will be LeBron's revenge when they knotted up at 2-2 for NBA Finals victories and he wins the title, and his revenge because the MVP of the league is going to be Kevin Durant. That's what I believe. He'll be the best player on the best team. And that's who will get the award. Because I don't think the other guys, unlike last year where you had these individually historic statistical seasons, given the circumstances of especially Harden and Westbrook are the two that could put those up, I don't think that's going to be the case. And so I think KD might could have won it last year if he wouldn't have gotten hurt. And so I think this year he does win it. But then loses in the finals to LeBron, and everybody's like, see, LeBron James is still the best in the world.
I have LeBron as MVP. I'm trying to pull up the MVP odds right now on Bovada just to check those out. So they have Kawhi Leonard is 1, LeBron 2, Durant 3, Westbrook 4, Giannis 5, Harden 5, Curry 6, and so on and so on. I just think this is a year where the point you hit on, Chris, where Westbrook's not going to have like that spectacular season statistically, and Harden won't as well either. With Kawhi, there's kind of the injury concern we have right now, and maybe that'll be irrelevant by the end of the year. But I don't feel great about picking an MVP that's already hurt heading into the season, or already has an injury, rather. So for me, like, I just think LeBron this year, the way he's going to carry that team without Isaiah Thomas early the year, I think this is going to be the year where people realize, damn, LeBron really should have been the MVP maybe the past a couple years when we missed out on him.
I think it's totally fair, because in the end, if you're not going to pick one of the best, a player off one of the best teams with the best records, of which we are confident of, then it has to be somebody that is has this absurd statistical season that is just undeniable.
Yeah.
That's how it happened. And so, you know,
like if Giannis shoots 39% from three,
yeah,
and he averages like 30 a game, then maybe he's
maybe
Milwaukee's the two seed or the one seed even if he does that.
Rookie of the year, I wanted so badly. You know, I love Donovan Mitchell, and yeah. I also think that he could be that his team could be the team that is better than a lot of people think, and in large part because of him, because I think he could be outstanding immediately. I want to take him so bad, but I don't think he's going to be able to get out from the Lonzo hype machine. And I think Lonzo is going to win it. He's going to be on national TV all the damn time. He will put up some unbelievable stat lines, and some of the highlights he puts up are just going to be totally absurd. And so I think it's Lonzo's to lose. I think he's going to get the minutes. He's going to get the highlights. He's going to get the stage. And I would be surprised if he doesn't win it.
I'm going with Ben Simmons, and that's a change from where I was a couple weeks ago, or even maybe even last week or so. I think Ben Simmons is going to put up big-time numbers. I think he's going to maybe come close-ish to averaging a triple-double. I mean, he's not going to average a triple-double, don't get me wrong here, but he's going to put up big statistical numbers, and volume is really a big thing when it comes to historically how voters make their choice when it comes to Rookie of the Year. So I think Simmons is going to put up better numbers than Lonzo Ball, even if maybe the better player as a rookie might actually be Lonzo. I think Simmons will be the winner.
All right. Next, Coach of the Year. You go first.
Brad Stevens. He's going to get these guys.
Of course. Good grief. You got the Celtics in the finals and Brad Stevens as Coach of the Year? I mean, I thought I was a homer.
Hey,
my God.
Hey. Is it fair to say, Brad, I'm asking you, is it fair to say Brad Stevens is one of the better head coaches in basketball?
Yes.
Okay. Is it fair to say that perhaps if the Celtics do get rolling early, one of the arguments in his favor will be how well he constructed a new-look team with 10 new players and only 4 returning players?
Fair.
I just think that's where it's going to come down
okay.
to. I think D'Antoni won last year. Kerr won the year before. I think there's maybe a little bit of voter fatigue with Greg Popovich. It's not even as much bias. It's thinking how the voters are going to make
okay.
their choice for
All right.
me.
And so, okay, I actually agree with you on that sense that it is about how the voters are going to make their call. Here's what I think. I think they wanted to give it to Spoelstra last year but couldn't because he didn't make the playoffs, and that this year they will.
That's
what I think.
That's a strong possibility. But how much of Spoelstra was the hype, like toward the run they made? How much did that influence the vote? When really, in reality, maybe it shouldn't have been a factor at all. I don't know. I'm just
hype. I mean, well, hell, they flipped the season upside down.
My ballot last year was Popovich 1, Stevens 2, Quinn Snyder 3. I'm a weirdo.
Why do you hate Spoelstra?
I don't hate Spoelstra.
I'm just kidding.
He's a very fine head coach.
I think,
and very well dressed too.
Well, Andy's got a funny center. We found out over the weekend.
that was epic.
Whiteside calling. I don't care what anybody says. Whiteside calling Embiid the Embiid eclipse was absolutely. Everybody gives Embiid all the credit for being funny, and what did he do? He made his location on Instagram. You know,
location is ass.
Very ass.
Yeah.
That's totally, he's very funny. But dude, Embiid eclipse is like
that
roast.
Good.
That's roast quality.
That was like high level comedy writing.
I just didn't. I did not see that one coming.
That's good.
All right. Sixth man of the year. I mean, again, you're talking about, obviously, it's Chandler Parsons. It's Eric Gordon, Lou Williams. We know all the names: Greg Monroe, Will Barton, Iguodala. I mean, those are kind of names I jotted down.
So, who's your pick out of those guys?
All right, given that I don't think they're going to be as good as you do, I'm out on Gordon.
Okay.
Okay? Lou Williams is in his prime right now, and he, like, people talked about him having a chance before he ever got moved to the Rockets.
Yeah.
So I'm a Lou Williams guy, and I think he's going to come off the bench and still keep getting buckets, and if they're as good as you think they're going to be, then he'll certainly be in the mix for that.
And voters love volume scorers off the bench. Jamal Crawford got voted for 10 times last year. So, 10 votes for Jamal Crawford out of 100.
Crazy.
Ridiculous.
That's crazy. I'd say Lou Williams, honestly.
Mine's Rudy Gay. Rudy Gay, Spurs. I think Rudy Gay, he's going to be playing start of the year. Looks pretty good so far. I mean, I think within his role that we'll see him play, I like the way they used him in his preseason debut. I think Rudy Gay could low-key be a guy who gets that volume scoring off the bench, but he's also playing for the Spurs. And I think we might see Rudy Gay be the guy that people look at and say, hey, comeback player of the year from the injury, sixth man of the year type of guy. I like Rudy Gay and the Spurs.
Gets a little bit of this, you know, sympathy. I don't want to say sympathy, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, there's right? the story aspect of it. Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's going to come down to Lou Williams or Greg Monroe, depending on which, you know, because if Milwaukee's really good.
Yeah, Greg Monroe's another good one.
You know? All right, so we got sixth man of the year. Defensive player of the year. You know, because I don't think Utah's going to be as good as some people do, that's why I went, I think, again, it's hard to win it when you're not on a really good team. And so I moved back a little bit from Gobert, and I think they'll give it to Draymond.
I'm with Draymond as well. I think he's the best defender in basketball, and I think he should win probably Defensive Player of the Year for as long as he stays at the level he does. I don't see how anybody could be better than him.
All right, last thing, and this is not an easy one to do. Let's just do first coach fired. Who do you think? You know what? We did not. We had the insane rarity where it did not take place last year. Nobody lost their job. And so now, you know, you've got to kind of meld either, you know, there's a couple things. Either you got new management, and so you're not that guy's guy anymore. Or
that's a factor.
Or you have expectations of which you are not meeting, right? Because, I mean, the easy ones are like somebody like Fred Hoiberg, but like nobody thinks they're going to win any games. Like, fine, go ahead and fire him. You're not going to win anyway. It's not his fault.
Who'd you have a couple weeks ago when we, I think we touched on
you remember, I kind of mentioned Jason Kidd.
Yeah.
And I just said, I was just worried on him that they got the new guy. But mine was Nate McMillan.
Okay.
Just because I think they'll go, what's the point?
Yeah.
Right? What is the point here? And they don't have, you know what I mean? Larry Bird ain't there anymore. They moved off of Frank Vogel.
Knicks is another team with the change management they've had.
Yep.
Knicks, Magic, too. I don't think
they'll get rid of Vogel.
Yeah, I mean,
they paid him a lot of money.
I mean, one of those teams, maybe. I don't think Phoenix. I don't think the Bulls would move on from Hoiberg unless like they just take the opportunity to find a clean slate. I mean, there's still. I mean, you look around the league. There's not a lot of. Teams
no, it's hard.
Think. I mean, the Clippers, if they totally bomb, if they're terrible, Doc Rivers. There's not a lot that I look at and say, that'll be the first coach fired.
No, McMillan's mine, and then if there is a shocker, it would be Kidd. Just because he is
that would be a complete shocker.
He is a huge personality. He really is. He's a huge personality within the walls of a franchise, right? And so him butting heads with somebody would not be outlandish at all. Especially if, like, you know, again, I talked to you about the Jabari stuff and whatever, and I don't know. I could just see, you know, again, a lot of times really good coaches get moved because of personality conflict, you know? Hell, I covered a team where Lionel
Hollins. You know something we don't know, Chris?
No, I'm telling you that Lionel Hollins won 56 games and was replaced by Dave Yeager. And made the Western Conference Finals.
You're really on that fire, maybe Jason
Kidd. No. I'm a big Jason Kidd fan. Let me say that.
Okay.
I'm telling you that when you find guys that have that alpha personality, and then they got to work with somebody else, you know, you kind of know what you're getting into. You know who you're working with. But now he doesn't. That's not the same anymore. They had to go find somebody else. And so those, you get the front office, you know, sideline clash. I hope he doesn't get gone.
I don't think so. I mean, what are the odds nobody gets fired again? I mean, could that happen? Could we see that happening where nobody gets fired for the second year in the row?
0% chance.
I think so, too. I'm with you. Someone's going to let go.
You think Budenholzer?
I don't know. I don't think
that's
so.
That's a changeover,
but
too,
that,
right?
That is. You're right. That's a possibility. But I don't know. I think he's a good coach. He's a really
too.
Good coach. So I don't see that happening.
Unfortunately, in the NBA, the standard has not been, are you a good coach? Whether or not you lose your job, right?
Mm-hmm.
Anyway. All right. I think we got all our predictions down. We're probably wrong about everything.
Except for Golden State. Except for the championship.
Except for no, I got Cleveland. Kevin, yeah. I'll be keeping up with the ringer.com and all of the NBA preview stuff that we got going on there. You're doing a great job as always, and I'll talk to you next week. Happy season.
Hey, man, I'm so excited, Chris. It's going to be fun.
I am too. That's going to do it for another Ringer NBA show. If you dig what you're hearing, go give us a rating and review on iTunes, and we will talk to you next week. Ringer NBA show brought today by Hotel Tonight. Things change, the weather changes, your mood definitely changes. So why lock yourself into plans that might change? With Hotel Tonight, you don't have to, because you'll get incredible deals on awesome hotels even at the last minute. Booking on Hotel Tonight gives you the freedom and flexibility to play things by ear, knowing you'll score a great price and a great place to stay. So download the Hotel Tonight app to find seriously amazing deals now.